This is Voice of the Cape Drive Time. Going places. Getting there.
91.3. Welcome to Voice of the Cape at Drive Time. 3W's dot gets you international. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi has approved stringent new counter-terrorism laws to fight a growing jihadist insurgency, or at least that's what we are told. The laws establish special courts and offer additional protection from legal consequences for military and police officers who have used force. Online to tell us more is Dr. Irfan Ahmed, Associate Professor of Political Anthropology, Institute for Religion, Politics and Society at the Australian Catholic University. Dr. Irfan Ahmed, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure is all ours. Now, looking at the situation, these new counterterrorism laws penned by Egyptian President al-Sisi, it seems as if they are being targeted at the insurgency in the Sinai. Is that how one should understand it, or is there a far broader objective to these so-called counterterrorism laws?
Well, the Sinai region factor, it seems more an excuse than actually the actual reason. In fact, it is not to counter the so-called terrorism, but the law itself, it is a piece of legislative terror, because the larger aim of this law is to silence all dissenting voices and not allow any kind of politics. And of course, the extraordinary measure and exception which is embedded into this law gives unbridled power and authority to the police, to the other law enforcing agencies, to arrest anybody without fair and sufficient trial, and that all boils down to silencing the dissent.
Now, it looks like Egypt is going down a black hole. A lot of these laws that we are seeing seem to go even further than the time of Nasser, even further than the time of Mubarak. Am I correct if I assume that?
Well, the interesting thing is that a lot of what is known as emergency law, it has been actually passed from the early 70s. And it is very surprising to note that a kind of permanent national emergency is there in Egyptian case for quite some time. Although this has been the case, but definitely, as I mentioned before, this new set of law is to address the new national situation as well as the international situation. And one can also locate it not simply in relation to Egypt, but also in relation to the wider world. And one can think of similar laws which the so-called democracies have passed, whether it is in UK, in India, in Australia. You might be surprised to know that until 9/11, Australia as a democracy had no national law on terrorism until 9/11. But between 9/11 and 2008, it passed 45 laws on terrorism. And all these laws allow extraordinary power to the police and various agencies. And that way, one could read it as subversion of civil liberties and democratic rights.
It seems as if this abstract noun terror has been used as a smokescreen, as you say, around the world to erode civic and human rights. Do you think a lot of the authorities have been aware of what they've actually done? It seems as if a lot of these anti-terror laws after 9/11 were more of a knee-jerk reaction than anything else. Your comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, it is both knee-jerk and at the same time it is embedded into well-thought-out strategy. But one has to also see it that in the larger context, and that is a lot of voices of dissent, and these are not simply connected to religion, but also a lot of dissent about anti-people policies which are of economic nature and that affect not simply Muslims, but a wider variety of population. So all this kind of neoliberalism has created a sense of dissatisfaction among the people, but terrorism or the so-called national security becomes the banner under which all these kind of dissenting voices in the name of religion, in the name of national security, are sought to be suppressed. And one needs to take into account this larger context.
Getting back to Egypt, do you think that Sisi is going to succeed in getting Egypt from the ashes, as it were? Because since Sisi has come to power, we haven't seen much movement, for example, on the economic front, and surely Egypt's biggest priority is not security, but economics, because it's got a young population that needs jobs.
Surely. And it seems to be that the government is not doing enough, or at least there has not been sufficient examples of success on that economic front. So rather than addressing those kind of crucial questions which confront the average Egyptian population, what al-Sisi, not simply with the local support, but also with the international support and support of the so-called Western democracies, rather than addressing those real issues, it is all hell-bent upon turning the whole Egypt into some kind of Robben Island, with mass imprisonment, with mass death sentences. And that is something which is not auguring well for the future of Egypt and for the future of democracy, for the future of rights, for the future of dissent, for the future of freedom of expression, all those values which we hold dear to ourselves.
Do you think that leaders like al-Sisi have to be careful in the sense that the snake can swallow its own tail, that they could themselves fall into the trap that they have been setting for others?
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult to predict the future, and I'm not a prophet to make that kind of prediction, but definitely based on what we see, and as you also mentioned in your remark, that and this is a striking thing, that rather than looking at the problem of Egypt in its all diversity, the whole effort is to reduce it to the so-called religious issue. And as you know, nationally, in the case of Egypt as well as internationally, the moment you bring the issue of religion and violence, it becomes terrorism, and somehow it gets defined in the register of Islam. And that, I think, is a very dangerous thing. In any case, as we know from the history, not simply of Egypt, but the whole world, that any group, any individual who resorts to violence, to say that that act is simply religious is absolute nonsense. I mean, it is always occasioned by a wide variety of factors, which include social, political, economic, lack of insecurity of average people. But all these factors are being sidelined and simply reduced to the issue of religion and extremism. And that way, what we see in Egypt, that politics itself, which is the which ought to be the birthright of every citizen, that is completely being suspended, even expelled, and we don't know for how long. And if this trend goes and continues in future, that, I think, is not at all positive for the future of Egypt, as well as for the future of the region at large, as well as internationally.
Dr. Irfan Ahmed, Associate Professor of Political Anthropology at the Institute for Religion, Politics and Society at the Australian Catholic University. Thanks for giving us comment on Egypt.